Sexy and Van City Radio may contain adult content. Listener discretion is advised. You are listening to Sexy and Van City Radio on 101.9 FM, CITR. Sexy and Van City Radio. Oh, and I should slow a few things down on pause because we can't have everything we want all at once. Sometimes we need to work for that. So that was a little bit of 7 Second Chase, which is a really hot album out, and that song was called Breakdown, which is very, very wonderful. So welcome to Sexy and Van City Radio on 101.9 FM, CITR. And we always talk about what is going on in the city. And I have two very, very sexy guests with me tonight. I've got Ms. Kelly Odell right in front of me, this luscious, gorgeous blonde who is this hepatitis awareness advocate who's based in Vancouver. And she's also a person who's lived with hepatitis C for many years and faced many challenges. It's many challenges. And on the phone, who is also a beautiful, gorgeous lady. And both these ladies, I want to add as well, are very smart and wonderful because I had the pleasure of meeting them at a dinner actually not that long ago, which is very exciting for the African Children's Choir. Leslie Gallagher is a hepatitis C support nurse, and she's worked with infectious diseases for 10 years and now works full-time educating and supporting individuals with hepatitis C at various Vancouver clinics. So welcome to the show, ladies.
Thank you.
So let's start off with the basics, which, because there's three different types of hepatitis, right? There's hepatitis A, there's hepatitis B, and there's hepatitis C. So what exactly is hepatitis C, just to let our listeners out there know?
Maybe I'll let Leslie explain in more detail what hep C is.
Well, first of all, hepatitis A and hepatitis B, we have vaccinations for. We can protect people from A, Hep B. However, Hep C is that one hepatitis that we can't protect you for, we cannot protect you from. You have to be wary. You have to be on guard, and you have to be able to access help from your doctor as far as information, as far as testing. Hep C is a virus that is only spread through blood-to-blood contact.
So it's not an STI, which sometimes people think it's a sexually transmitted infection.
That's true. People do mistake the fact that Hep C is can be carried in semen or in saliva, but that's absolutely untrue. It's just blood-to-blood contact.
Definitely not an STI.
Not considered a sexually transmitted disease.
What is it? What are the symptoms? So how would somebody know that they have it?
They probably wouldn't.
Okay. So how would somebody think to get tested? Or is it when you get blood work done, is it something that we normally get tested for? Or do you have to ask for it specifically?
Absolutely not normally tested for. I think it's really important to get a baseline for all of the sexually transmitted diseases, as well as the hepatitis C and hepatitis A. And I think that everybody should have that on their record, and probably follow it up periodically and be retested.
Yeah, and I think that it's important to know that it's not spread through casual contact like hugging or kissing or cuddling, because that's a really big misconception that it's a casual contact disease.
So that would be, if that was one of our top five myths, that would definitely fall under fiction.
It definitely is that. Definitely. But important to know that there's lots of misconceptions about it, like that it is a drug addict's disease, or lots of people think that. And like we've discussed before, there's other ways to get it, like sharing a razor.
Which that blew me away when our listeners out there, I was chatting to Kelly about this, and I don't know about you, but I can't tell you how many times that when I used to have roommates that I'd come home and I'd need to shave my legs, and I'd touch my razor and it wasn't doing as good as it should, and it's like, come here, you burned my razor again. It's like, yeah, I know. And it just kind of blew me away, because I think that's, as women, it's one of those things that we share personal hygiene items a lot of the time, and we don't think twice about that.
Oh yeah. Or at camp, who didn't stand in the shower and pass a razor from one girl to the next?
Totally.
Girl,
and even with going swimming sometimes, or going to the gym where you're there, and it's like, oh shoot, I forgot it, and I'm on my way to work, and or I've got a hot date afterwards. Can I borrow your razor, because I don't want him to touch my legs and have less stubbles.
Little
I want
bristles.
Exactly. It's like, it's fine for his face. I don't really want it on my thighs.
Yeah. And yeah, and you nick yourself, and there's blood on the razor, and somebody else nicks themselves. It's possible. It's not likely, but it is possible.
So nail scissors and nail files.
Nail scissors and nail files.
Yeah, so, but it's so important to keep all personal hygiene items to yourself.
Definitely. And just on the note of nail files, as you both know, I also do work in the downtown east side. I'm just curious in terms of that. We always use disposable nail files, but in terms of when you are working in a spa, for example, say you're going to get your nails done or a pedicure, is that something to be aware of, perhaps bringing your own files in, or... what, or is that being a little bit over extreme?
Well, go ahead, Kelly.
Well, I'm really, really cautious when I go all the time to get my nails done.
I've got gorgeous nails. Listeners, if you saw them, we do have to get a webcam in here, because this woman is hot. She's got gorgeous hair, and oh my God, I can hear those nails.
Yes.
Yeah, they're very beautiful.
Thank you. But I always want to be sure that they have a sterilizer in the nail salons that I go to.
And they should have that anyways, just for health practice and health care. But
yeah.
Still.
Leslie, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm really cautious. Just real cautious. I mean, when you go to Bali and you sit on the beach and get your nails done, I'd be really careful.
Yeah. No, that's true. It's something that I think we have to be really, really cautious about. So that's personal, just in terms of sharing personal hygiene items. And it's interesting that we should be aware of it when we're getting services done. Are there any other types of services, perhaps, that we should be aware of that
like besides obviously a spa environment, perhaps just being really cautious if they're using perhaps just certain things for extractions, for facials, or...
Well, I think anything where blood is...
possibility of being drowned. Yeah. Okay.
And be really clear that you don't always see blood. Blood can be there, and you don't actually see red blood.
Yeah.
But there can be actual blood happening. Like there can be open wounds. Tattoos. Get your tattoos done. You know, in North America, at least we have some regulations going on. Don't go off on holiday to Mexico and, you know, get yourself a nice tattoo on your backside because you don't know what's going on there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think just make sure everything's sterile and clean.
Okay. As a side note to this, though, I do have to ask one more fact or fiction that doesn't have to do with Hep C, but does have to do. Is it true if you get that tattoo right on your lower back that you can't get an epidural when you're pregnant and you're going to have a baby and go in labor?
No.
Okay. Somebody had told me that, and I've been wanting to ask the medical practitioner that as well before I said yes or no on the show.
No, not true.
Okay. What other, there's a lot of different things in terms of with Hep C, with the myths. I know I brought one up right off at the top where sometimes people think it's a sexually transmitted infection,
right.
Which on that note, Kelly, you brought in those great books that up from Health Canada about just the updated STIs, which everybody out there, I don't care whether you're 90 or whether you're a teenager, it's really good to be looking at this. And it was really cool because Hep C was not listed in there, which is very exciting.
I was really glad to get that. Leslie, you didn't know I just got them from updated version of all the latest STIs today. I just opened it tonight before I came, and Hep C was not listed. Hep B was, but Hep C was not listed in the latest version of all STIs by Health Canada.
Which is great.
Yeah.
It's really great. And I just find it really fascinating just... because for our listeners out there, too, it's just, yeah, it's important because this is a sex and relationship show, and it's so important in the sense that we know that. So it's something to be aware of, but it's not something that's transmitted sexually.
Yeah, it's been something that's bothered a lot of people with Hep C for quite a while, that talking to partners about Hep C and misinformation about there, whether or not it was a sexually transmitted disease, or if it wasn't, and how do they talk to their partner about it, and that's why I was glad to have the opportunity to come on your show and talk about these issues.
Well, I'm glad you are too, because you know a lot more about it than I do, and I like being educated. I make a great schoolgirl.
I've heard.
Who told you? I heard you do listen to my show and find out.
I think the facts about Hep C is that there's no vaccine is an important thing, because a lot of people think when they've been vaccinated for Hep A and B that also protects them for Hep C.
So that's a really huge misconception out there, so it's really important to address that. So I'm glad you brought that up.
And because kids now get vaccinated for Hep A and B in school, and they're thinking that protects them for hepatitis C also, and it does not. So that's a really important thing for them to know.
Mm-hmm. One of the other things I wanted to ask, is it true Hep C lives for up to 4 days outside of the human body?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
But? As far as infection goes, you'd have to have some kind of an open wound or some kind of an open blood source for that infection to get into to actually infect a person. But it actually... it does not die. It's actually viable for 4 days.
Okay.
So it's a pretty strong, really resilient virus, and it's easy to get it.
Wow.
So potentially, Les, if somebody did cut themselves with a razor and blood was living on that razor and somebody else cut themselves, could they... get the virus that way, contract the virus that way?
Yeah, but maybe this is a good time to talk about getting the virus as opposed to having the virus enter your body.
Yeah.
20% of all people who actually are exposed to Hep C, actually their own bodies can actually fight it off themselves.
Really?
So they can actually spontaneously clear. So I've actually met many people walking around thinking that they've got Hep C because they've had a preliminary test done many, many years ago. But we've gone on to do further testing and found out that that patient actually cleared the virus himself and no longer is not being affected by Hep C. There's no damage being done, and there's no virus replicating in their bodies. So that's why it's really important to get educated about what's going on with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's key. We are going to take a really, really tiny quick short break, but when we get back, we're going to continue talking about a couple more myths, and then we're going to talk about getting into the relationship and dating and sex stuff, and when is the right time to tell someone if you have Hep C, and talking about protecting from transferring. So we're going to talk a little bit about more about that. So we will be talking about how to talk about your relationships and sex, of course. So you're listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM CITR. We will be right back.
Copper silverware, index finger in the back of the fork, index finger on top of the knife.
What's the matter? Doesn't that sound exciting to you?
Luckily, dining at the Sub is a little less formal.
The Honor Roll Sushi Bar. Get maki rolls, rice bowls, and bento boxes made fresh all day. Don't forget to ask about our party platters. Located in the basement of the Sub, the Honor Roll Sushi Bar is open Monday through Friday. This business is owned and operated by the AMS, your student society.
I like sushi. It's really yummy. So although I wonder about that, you have to be really careful if you decide to do a Sex in the City Samantha moment where you have sushi all over every part of your anatomy and perhaps you're a little bit into blood play. You have to be really careful with the transmission, wouldn't you? Although blood, sushi, not really my thing. Don't know if it's anybody's thing, but you never know. I'm sure there's a website out there for that type of fetish, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? My mind goes in really strange places you don't want to know sometimes. Anyway, we are back. And if you're just joining us right now, we're chatting with Kelly O'Dell and Leslie Gallagher. And we've been talking about Hep C. And right before the break, we were chatting about some of the myths that are out there in terms of, A, obviously, that it A is not an STI was the number one myth. And we are also starting to talk about a few other things. Ladies, would you like to add on to that about some of the facts, Kelly, you're about to mention?
Well, I think we started to cover the facts about, mm-hmm. just most importantly, that it's a blood-to-blood transmission disease. I think that's
a fact.
That's a fact.
Okay.
That's a fact. And that there's no vaccine for Hep C. And
fact.
Hep C is not a routine blood test. You need to request that when you're at your doctor's. And everybody should get tested for Hep C.
Okay, and I'm going to ask Leslie, how often should people be tested?
That really depends on your risk factors.
Okay, what would put somebody in a high-risk category?
Well, I'll tell you, if I had a tattoo, okay. I'd probably want to go and get checked out. If I'd had a piercing,
oh wow,
I would probably want to go and get checked out.
Does that include my ears?
Probably not, because you probably went to one of those little places in the mall.
I went to my aunt's hair salon, actually, and I just remember it got stuck in my ear. So to this day, my left ear still never completely heals, so which is why I don't wear earrings most of the time. I have to repuncture it every time I put a pair of earrings on. But I was curious.
So I think if you haven't ever been tested before, go ahead, get tested, get a baseline. And then as risk factors come along, I think snorting cocaine is really downplayed, and I think that that's something that's really, really relevant to Hep C transmission.
And do you find that a lot in Vancouver in terms of with coke still being pretty popular in terms of the scene just in general?
Yeah, people kind of tend to think, Hep C, no, I've never, you know, used needles, I've never had a transfusion. And then you kind of mention, well, snorted any cocaine, and it's like, oh, now they're interested. So I think that that's just get yourself a baseline test,
mm-hmm.
and then periodically, as you know, things happen in your life, things occur, then maybe it would be worth rechecking.
Is it worth rechecking once a year? Because I usually recommend to listeners that they kind of at least once a year for our lady listeners go for a pap smear, for example, get a full physical. Would that be something to request every year? Or I know you said it depends on the lifestyle, but...
It certainly wouldn't hurt to request it. However, Some doctors are going to really want to take a really good history and find out exactly what's been going on with you, because they're going to be a little bit reluctant to just run tests with without being able to justify them. So it certainly is not going to hurt. It's going to put you at rest.
Mm-hmm.
As far as sharing with a new partner, you're going to be able to say, I've just been tested. Everything's cool. What a great way to share. Come in with your blood result, your test results.
Yeah. That's true. And people are requesting that more and more. So just in general, usually it's with HIV, but every other STI
Absolutely.
Out there.
Absolutely.
So it's important. I was telling Kelly in the waiting room, we had one doctor on the show, actually, which... I had known in about 2002, because the street nurses in the downtown east side had done a study where they found an increase with the sex workers, that there was an increase in syphilis. And what I found interesting was when we had a doctor on the show talking about it, he mentioned one of the more unusual cases he got was a gentleman who had the sores on the back of his neck. And it was from some sort of frat party where he had a naked woman on the back of his neck. And it wouldn't be somewhere where you'd think, but for that one, for example, that's skin contact. So it would just blew me away. So you never know.
And not somewhere you'd think to look.
No, he didn't even have fun getting it.
He might have fun with riding in the back of his neck.
Yeah, that's true. We didn't go into what he was doing after the riding on the neck. Hopefully the riding on the neck went to riding for other things, just as long as they played it safe. But it's just interesting, because you would think if you're playing it safe that... it could be good.
I think you can never play it safe enough.
No, that's true. I know you and I were chatting about that, even with long-term monogamous relationships. Sometimes it's really important, because you never know with people, just in general, even though I know that's a really sad thing to say, but it's a fact, just that you don't know.
You know, the interesting thing about hepatitis C, though, monogamous relationships, is partners have not been found to have it.
What are the stats on that,
The research study was done, I think that they looked at 900 individuals, partners of people with Hep C, and followed them for 10 years, and at the end of that time, 3 people actually became Hep C positive. But interestingly, they were all different genotypes, because Hep C has different types. And they were all different types from what their partners were, which lends us to think, okay, they didn't get it through sex then. They got it from some other source.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah. So, and then people will be diagnosed with Hep C after being married for 30 years and their partner does not have it. So it's definitely not a...
it's not a
common sexually transmitted disease. Not to say never. You want to avoid it when you're having your period. Anal sex, maybe higher risk.
I was just going to ask with that, because there's less membrane in the cavity. So
anything where there could be a tear or something where it's possible that blood could be involved.
Mm-hmm.
I like to say it's minimal but not absent.
No. So it's really important to be really aware and just being careful.
So you should still talk to your partners if you're not using condoms about having Hep C. I think, it's an important conversation. But, at what stage do you have that conversation? I think that's a personal decision. And people ask me that all the time. Do we have to tell people before we have sex?
And what is your take on that, personally?
I talk about Hep C all the time because I'm an advocate.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the only way that we're going to start to make a change is by breaking the silence. And people are living with the same stigma and discrimination that people did with AIDS in the 80s.
Yeah.
So the only way to make a change is by talking and by being open. But if you're not comfortable, I think if you're using a condom, you don't necessarily have to tell. But of course, if you're going to enter into a long-term relationship, you should definitely be having that conversation.
I'm kind of a geeky gal. I tell about everything, but yeah but it's I agree. It's not something that, say, you're on a Plenty of Fish date, and it's like, "Hi, my name is Caroline, and I have blah, 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 and my father was this, and my mother was that," and all that, because there is such thing as too much information too soon. We're going to freak everybody out, where they're like, "Oh, my goodness." And I have had that, where I've had the dates with a guy where it's just like, "Yeah, hi, I had a nervous breakdown 3 months ago, and, you know, I still use cocaine occasionally, and blah, blah." And I'm just like, "Whoa, okay, I think you need to deal with your own stuff first." Yeah. So I don't know if you're ready to date anybody yet except for yourself. But then there's other times where, as you're getting to know someone and just kind of seeing, is this somebody you really want in your life? So, and if they can't accept this now, do you really want them in your life on that intimate level? Because sometimes I think in society that sex isn't as sacred as it should be. And I don't mean that we should all be waiting till we get married, you know, to have babies and just using it for procreation. But I think there's something really beautiful and sacred about sex, and just making sure that it starts off with really, well, obviously, chemistry, and then making sure that there's a lot of the same value systems in terms of
honesty.
Yes. Honesty tempered with timing, because we could have the crazy person who's like, "Hi, my name is blah, blah, and I have da-da-da," as if it was like an AA group or something like that. And it's like, even though that's important, it's time and place. And just finding out what's right. And it should definitely be before you're actually in bed, where it's just at that moment of penetration. It's like, "Oh, by the way," yeah, there's certain times where it's not the best time to do that. At least that's my take. Leslie, what do you think?
Well, that's pretty interesting, because we were talking about STIs.
Mm-hmm.
We've determined that Hep C is not an STI, but it still is an infectious disease.
Mm-hmm.
Now, HIV, infectious disease.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're in a situation where you've got to confide,
mm-hmm,
and you have HIV as opposed to Hep C, would that be a different time frame?
No, actually, I'd actually still the same thing. I would do, granted, I think I'm a little overzealous personally, because I do believe honesty is really important. So whether or not someone has herpes, whether or not somebody has HPV, depending which strain, whether or not there's warts attached or not, depending on what strain of the virus they've got, I think it's really important to have all conversations. If I had breast cancer, I would be telling somebody, because I think it's really important that that people know, and that I think the only way we can get these conversations going, because a lot of people have certain stigmas and things like that, and I'd rather know personally going into something that I've got somebody who is going to be able to understand me and really accept all of me, because I think that's part of the relationship, is even though we don't always agree with somebody, like regardless of what it is, whether or not it's something like, say, I've got three breasts or something like that, but the point being is they will, you know, they'll accept it. They may not like the fact that I have three breasts. Hopefully they'll love at me even more because of it, because I've got more to play with, you know, say hypothetically. But the point, you know, it's just it's just that way, and I think it's really important for us to trust people.
It's a huge risk.
It is a very huge risk.
Even though it's an infectious disease, it's not an STI like HIV or like the others. It's more a chronic disease. And it's not in the same classification.
No.
But you know what I've experienced is people who are confronted with Hep C,
mm-hmm,
I think it's a lack of education around Hep C that they get quite frightened off. I think even HIV, I've had people understand that.
Mm-hmm.
They understand it. There's much more out there about HIV. We're much more in tune with it. We understand the risk factors. Mm. With Hep C, I think, like, people go, "Well, I've been vaccinated against that." There's a real, real lack of education around Hep C.
So how do we change that by actually chatting to people? Like, the fact that it's not in the Health Canada manual that Kelly brought in, the little booklets about all the STIs, is awesome. But how do we educate people in a way when it comes to just our one-on-one relationships? Like, Kelly, you're an advocate, and I know you talk about this all the time. So how is it? How do you tell people, and how do you encourage people just to talk, whether or not it be your friends, whether it be your family? Before the show, Kelly and I were chatting in the green room about the fact that there's people in the States who live with their parents who have hepatitis C, whose parents actually change things like the shower curtains every day and the bath mats, you name it, because they are so paranoid of coming down with it. And how do we change that where we can have these conversations and facilitate it? So does that mean we need somebody like Leslie there, you know, to help work through, or like a life coach that maybe specializes in communication and is educated as well? Or what is the answer, do you think?
Well, it's a whole movement, really. Mm-hmm. Sort of the launch of the Living for a Change campaign, this World Hep Day, and why I'm very proud to have proclamation in Vancouver, and we're the only city in Canada to have a proclamation for World Hepatitis Day.
Nice.
And why we've done events the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Why I'm on a national steering committee to do more events across Canada, and involved in a global initiative to try to do more awareness campaigns, because there's such a lack of education.
Mm-hmm.
And without education, we're not going to change the mindset of people. And we need factual information out there, like doing shows like yours and doing other events,
mm-hmm.
and raising awareness, because there's so much information about HIV. And in BC, there's only 12,000 cases of HIV, 60,000 cases of Hep C.
In BC, 60,000?
60,000.
Wow.
And yet, how many supports and services are there for HIV?
Tons, because of the fact it was a huge media campaign and there was a lot of money invested in terms of the education, and it still took a long time. Like, cause I remember in the 80s, somebody very dear to me actually died. Well, I know a lot of people who did, but somebody who was one of my mentors, and that was really challenging. So when he died, but for me it was also because my mom died 6 months earlier. So it was a weird time in general, but I know he faced a lot of stigma at the time. This was probably 1989, 1990, so it's been a while.
But it came from people speaking out and breaking the silence and getting together and working together,
mm-hmm.
and putting campaigns together. And it's time that we do that for hepatitis.
Okay. I think so too, which you're doing that with Hep C Canada, which I think is good. It's really good.
Thank you. And I'm glad to have people like Leslie and other partners in the community. So mm-hmm. we're really working hard to try to make changes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's say that I had Hep C, okay? And I've come to both of you because I'm just like, hey, I met this amazing guy and I want to tell him. So what would you say? Like, should I be like, hey, I need to tell you about something. I have Hep C, and these are the facts, and just laying it out on the lines. Here's a website that you can go to if you want to find out some more information about it. And if he said something like, oh, well, actually, I've been vaccinated about it. It's actually, no, you haven't. You've probably been vaccinated for Hep A, Hep B, but Hep C, there's no vaccination for it. And these are the things that I deal with on a day-to-day basis when I'm feeling ill, or these are some of the symptoms. And, you know, sometimes I may get tired. I may need to take some time. Like, I guess I'm just paraphrasing right now, but...
That's really good. That's exactly it. And I think that's the thing, is people just need to be straightforward.
Okay.
And just, really not beat around the bush. Just, I have Hep C. I think it's not really something to hide. And I find it much easier by just telling people right away.
Mm-hmm.
And not waiting.
Yeah.
I think it's a lot easier to just say, hi, I'm Kelly and I have Hep C.
Okay. So you're... But that works for you, which is awesome.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah. And maybe it doesn't for everyone else. And we find that, Leslie will tell you, you know, like even doing events, it's really difficult to get anybody to come to the event. Leslie does support groups. She can talk a little bit about what mm-hmm. happens at the support groups and what people need and what they go through.
Okay, I'd love that. Especially, I'd be curious in terms of for when you're dating someone, when one partner has Hep C and the other doesn't, in terms of ways that some of the challenges that they go through, especially in a relational and relational plateau, if that makes sense. So if we can just hold those thoughts for just a second, because we're going to have to take a short break. But when we get back, we will be chatting a little bit more about that. So everybody out there, as you know, you're listening to Sexy in Van City Radio 101.9 FM on CITR. And we are going to be right back. And let's hope that yours truly can figure out how to use the CD player, because we are going to be playing a little bit more tunage. We are back.
Want to learn more about the birds and the bees and the fairies, or vibrant agriculture, delicious homegrown food, solar energy, and much more. Check out the Society of Roding Environmental Conservation. Come to one of our workshops, join our solar panel tour, or go to our website www.spec.bc.ca for more information.
You are listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM, CITR. Sexy in Van City Radio may contain adult content. Listener discretion is advised.
And we are back in the box, in the Sexy in Van City box right through here. And I almost for just a moment was actually thinking Juice Box, which was my old show I used to do with Julia Saunders, and it's probably because I can feel her because she's on campus somewhere tonight. She mentioned she might be around. So Julia, if you're listening, I'm thinking of you as we are chatting on a wonderful show. And if you're just joining us tonight, I'm talking to Kelly O'Dell and Leslie Gallagher, and we've been chatting about Hep C. And that song we just played was Afterlife. And that was by 7 Seconds Chase. And it kind of followed a little bit because I didn't turn the CD player off, because sometimes I get a little technically challenged, called Here in the End. And hopefully we're not going to get Here in the End quite just yet, because we want to talk a little bit more about support and what we can do when we're with someone who has Hep C or and is going through treatment. Because Kelly, over the break, we're chatting about the fact that with treatment, there's some things that you go through just in terms of on a physical level as well as emotional, and that's you just dealing with that on in oneself, and let alone when you're in a relational relationships. Whoops, I think we just lost Leslie. Did we lose Leslie? I think we might have lost Leslie. Nope.
I'm here.
Are you there? Okay.
Good.
Sorry, I was like, oh, I'm not sure what happened there, so I'm glad you're there.
Yeah.
Welcome back, Leslie.
I'm fading a little bit, and I sing because I'm doing weekly shots of interferon still and talking about some of the side effects of interferon, and saying maybe we should cover a little bit about how interferon and ribavirin affects people and how challenging that can be when someone is in a relationship, especially with the mood swings. So maybe you want to talk a little bit about that, Les.
So I guess it's important to get it out there that there actually is a treatment for Hep C.
Yeah. Which is
and,
great.
We've had a lot of success with people actually clearing the virus. So I think that's probably where I come in, and I encourage individuals to bring their partners into me, and we sit down and have a pretty intense conversation about the disease, prevention of transmission, prognosis, and we get the partner really involved so that they're not excluded, because this basically the person with Hep C who's going to embark on this whole journey of treatment becomes the focal point, the focal person in the relationship. So I think it's really important to make sure that it's something that they do together.
Yeah, it's great that, well, and it's good that somebody can have someone support them through treatment. And because treatment sometimes can be as serious and as toxic as chemotherapy, and, you know, where people going through treatment for cancer, and cancer is almost more of a sexy disease or a compassionate disease where people go on. It has the awe factor, where there isn't any of that for people with Hep C. It's almost people are standoffish. And, and in my case, I lost all of my hair. And when people would say, oh, you're doing chemotherapy, and I'd say, no, I'm doing interferon, where first it was the lean in for the hug, and then it was the sort of lean back, like, oh, my God, right?
Wow.
So, yeah, it's two different mindsets. So it's really good what Leslie does in bringing in the partner and educating the partner and getting them involved together.
And how do you do that, Leslie? Like, say Kelly and I are a couple, and we're going in, and
we'd be a hot couple.
We would be very hot. The blonde and the brunette. Listeners out there, yeah, you'd be, yeah, having some fun, I think.
Okay.
I think I'm embarrassing Kelly.
That's hard to do.
But
I know that's hard. what to do. Okay.
But if we came to you and let's just say that I started dating you and we're in the middle and you're in the middle of treatment and I didn't really understand because yes, you were having mood swings and I'm grumbly about that where it's like, gee, you know, you don't want to sleep with me anymore and you know, you're being moody, so don't you love me anymore? And it's like, no, talk to Leslie. So, Leslie, what would you say if somebody came in like that, where they're pretty grumpy, didn't really understand where this is coming from, and was getting a little bit frustrated?
And you're not getting what you want out of that relationship or what you need because the other person is so focused on
healing.
Yeah, exactly. I reiterate, it's the medication.
Mm-hmm. So it really is. It's the medication. It's yeah. not you. And I'm being serious. So.
Exactly.
Okay.
And this is a long treatment.
Yeah.
We're talking about for the majority of people in the Vancouver area, mm-hmm. we're talking about a year of treatment.
Okay. Wow.
So you might go at this as a partner. You might be strong and supportive. 3 months in, you know, you know, your partner's looking pretty good. Like, what's going on here? How mm-hmm. come all this lethargy, this fatigue, this moodiness, not pulling your weight as far as the household stuff goes? And you're kind of thinking, okay, it's time for another talk with the nurse. Because it doesn't get better through that year. It probably just gets, I call it the accumulation effect of this whole treatment, because it actually is chemotherapy.
Yeah.
You're on a chemical therapy, and it's taxing.
I can imagine. So for that second talk, when it's 3 months in, and I'm like, it's getting worse. She's worse than me in my worst PMS days. What is going on here?
Way worse than your PMS days. It's really
so
crazy.
You haven't seen my PMS days. And I'm teasing and being light, but yes, I believe you. So
It's pretty crazy. I kind of try to focus on the light at the end of the tunnel.
Okay.
Like, okay, let's plan something for the end of this. This is going to end. Everything's going to come back to normal. And let's talk about, you know, what are we going to do to celebrate at the end?
Okay.
A year
from
now.
Focus on the celebration.
Okay. And is there any support in terms of, because I know, Leslie, you are amazing. Is there other workers that have... where they're able to facilitate the way you do, where you're able to support and offer support to the partners, or are there some support groups out there that we can recommend to our listeners?
There's definitely support groups in Vancouver. There's several hepatitis C nurses. All of the infectious disease docs, the gastroenterologists, they all have nurses that work with them. I'm really fortunate that I'm involved with several different teams, and we all use the same model where we actually have groups. I guess I'm involved with four different groups every week
mm-hmm.
That meet at different places that are patients that are getting just education around Hep C, that are considering going on treatment for Hep C.
Mm-hmm.
We should probably mention that 43% of all the people on the liver transplant list have Hep C. That's why they're there.
The leading need for liver transplant.
So I think it's important to understand that Hep C is a very, very serious disease.
Mm-hmm.
And the earlier we can get a handle on it, the better. But there are groups in town. There are other nurses in town. And I just encourage people to just get out there and just get your doctor to educate, to test you, to get onto Hep C BC website to find out what's being offered,
mm-hmm.
and to just get some baseline testing. Get educated.
In terms of education, if you could change the school curriculum that we get in high school, where do you think that people should start being educated about Hep C, or should start at elementary school level? Like things like, for example, this weekend I was at the cancer, I was at the health fair, and they had for BC Cancer, I believe it was BC Cancer, it was one of, I always get them all mixed up because there's so many different ones for cancer. But they had one there, and I thought it was interesting where they even had like how to eat right for like, you know, 2 to 6 year olds, how to feed your kid. And where does it start in terms of education? And with most of theirs, it was basic things that I thought were, like, you know, following, you know, the Canadian Food Guide as an example. So it was interesting. So they were incorporating that into cancer right off from the get-go. So when parents were going around, they were getting that demographic. They were also getting, like, adults, like, in terms of obesity, et cetera. So it was a really interesting booth where at first I didn't realize it was a cancer booth. So where do you think we should start with the education if we have to start? And let's say, like, from 1 to 5, where does it need to start and what age?
Because Hep C is a liver disease, it infects the liver, and it can be exacerbated by other situations like obesity, which we're now seeing at a much earlier age.
Mm-hmm.
Hep B, for example, we used to come in at grade 6, and the whole idea behind that was, let's get these kids vaccinated before they become sexually active.
Okay.
So it's not necessarily the case with Hep C. I think the education should probably come in there right with Hep B.
Okay.
At that age, because when are we going to start getting out there and experimenting? When are we going to get out there and start thinking about tattoos and these frivolous things we do when we're young and we don't know what the repercussions are?
That's true. And the average age for street life, basically, like to experience life on the street, is 12 in BC.
Exactly. And
14 across the country.
And what age are you sponges? Mm. Like, when are you absorbing all that information?
I mean,
when are you learning about, you know, sexually transmitted diseases and HIV and all? And this is probably, that's probably a great age to incorporate, I think, Hep C.
Okay. I think that's really important.
Yeah, just overall.
And from there, is there a lot of cases or not too many with children who have it?
There is children with Hep C, and you know, I think that's the good thing of the 1 in 12 campaign.
Okay, and 1 in 12.
One in 12
across Canada or
worldwide?
Worldwide.
Wow.
And 1 in 100 in Canada have hepatitis, and it dispels the myths. Because then it shows, you know, every time you're in a room with 12 people, you go, one of us could have hepatitis. So it dispels the myths and stereotypes about who has hepatitis. It could be any of us.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, children have hepatitis.
So at that, if you had a child that had hepatitis, is there support for the parents as well? Like, in terms of how to guide their child through so they don't feel bad and it doesn't foster, like, unhealthy self-esteem or...
There's so little support and services
right,
for hepatitis. I
right.
cannot tell you. Like, when Leslie is saying, the supports and services that are out there now are so few and far. There's a few support groups now on the downtown east side, and I deal with a lot of mainstream women, to use that phrase, and there's no support groups. So I'm really the only link here, and I'm going to meet women one-on-one for coffee, or going to meet women at their doctor's appointments, going to meet women wherever I can.
Wow.
And some men also.
I was just going to ask,
and
what about the men?
It's especially difficult for women 40s and 50s who may not know how they contracted the disease.
Mm-hmm.
And they're dealing with so many issues and discrimination from families, about them having been drug users or them being promiscuous, perhaps. So it's so important that we set up more supports and services. There is not supports and services in our city. And you look at the size of Vancouver and 60,000 people with Hep C and 60,000 people with Hep B. So 120,000 people with Hep B or C. And 12,000 people with HIV. So when you do those numbers, it's amazing to me.
It is amazing. I'm surprised. What were the stats you're saying for the liver transplant, the wait list, where there were, what was the percentage?
43% of those individuals have Hep C.
43%?
43%.
That's really high, and I'm surprised that there isn't anything through. And I know they do such a great job already, the Transplant Society of BC, but I'm just wondering if there's a way of linking up that way, if there might be some... Well, we won't talk about fundraising on the show, but, I was thinking of it.
The need for liver transplant, and actually Dr. Erb, who's the head of BC Transplant, is a member of our Living for a Change team.
Tell me a little bit more about Living for a Change, because you're mentioning about that. And I want to hear more about this,
well,
because you've got
really
some really cool ideas.
It's a campaign that we launched this World Hep Day, and it was a poster campaign to get hepatitis information in as many different diverse businesses as we possibly could.
Okay.
And postcards, because so few people know about hepatitis, so we just tried to get information as many places as we possibly could for World Hepatitis Day this year.
Okay.
As well as have a press event at City Hall.
Nice. And that was called Living for a Change.
That was Living for a Change.
And it's on YouTube.
I'm very proud to have 7 Second Chase be a part of that.
Nice. No, I think that's cool.
Yeah.
So, and the listeners out there, that's the music that we were playing earlier. So, just to plug the band again, because apparently they're getting play in the U.S., which sometimes I find interesting. Sometimes it goes all the way to the States, then comes back here. Although on CITR, we do play a lot of local, which is always cool.
And the great thing about 7 Second Chase is,
besides the fact they're a firefighter.
Yeah, the singer is a first responder, so he's at high risk for hepatitis.
That is something really valid in terms of, actually, that would be really hot, actually, having the firemen doing a calendar for you. And I know they do it for the burn unit because, of course, they're so hot that we can't help but. But it's, you know, with something, it's really important. So you never know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you guys, thank you so much for being on the show. Where can people find out more information? How can they contact you? And if they want to get involved with, if they want to donate funds, want to become a contributor, or perhaps they have Hep C or have someone, or they're in a relationship with somebody who has, and they want to support them and become more educated, where can they find out more about you?
Well, www.hepccanada.com.
Nice.
And in 2010, we're working towards our goal of a global world concert for hepatitis.
Nice.
So we're looking for any people serious about getting involved in that project, musicians or others.
There's a lot that listen to CITR, so you never know. So
please contact us through Hep C Canada.
That sounds perfect.
And Carolyn, thank you so much for having us on the show.
Well, you're welcome. It's been a pleasure finding out a lot more. And as I said, even though I didn't wear my schoolgirl skirt today, or my stockings, or my little pretty button-up shoes, or my frilly little panties, although I am wearing a skirt and you can't tell, but you never know. But with that, I've really enjoyed having both of you on this show, and I hope my listeners out there are going to find out a bit more, too. And for those of you guys who will probably be listening to the podcast a little later on, I hope you've enjoyed this show. Up next is Hans von Claus's Misery Hour, who is an incredibly sexy man to be miserable with. Oh, he's stroking my shoulder right now. I just like being touched. It's pretty hot, and Kelly's giggling at me right now. I haven't even looked at his shoes yet, but he has he's very pretty, and when you look at his shoes...
Oh, thank you.
I have a thing for his shoes. I always get these little shoe guys.
Snake skin.
He makes me very happy, very sexy. I think he's enjoying the admiration here because he's standing here now.
I would be sick if I wasn't. There's nothing really wrong with me.
No, there's nothing. You're very wonderful. So, everyone, I hope you've enjoyed tonight's show. And next night, we will be back at the 7th.